Now, the Scottish Government is aiming to increase forest cover from around 17% to 25% by the middle of this century. As it stands, much of our forestry is currently privately owned, more so than anywhere else in Europe, largely because of helpful tax incentives. As more funding becomes available to plant woodland, some people have started to question where that money should go. Land rights writer Andy Whiteman recently published a report on who owns Scotland's forests.
For a start, we've got the most concentrated pattern of private ownership of forests of anywhere in Europe. Most European countries have got a lot of very small-scale forest holdings. We've got virtually no small-scale forest holdings, and the distribution is skewed towards the larger ones. We also have a pattern of ownership that's dominated by absentee owners. Over half don't actually live anywhere in the community. In fact, a third of them live outside Scotland. And this is because forestry is seen mainly as an investment by people with a lot of money. I suppose what I'm arguing and what more and more people are arguing is, well, forests could deliver a lot more than just be an investment for someone who lives in London. They could deliver a lot more for the local community, for the environment, for the local economy. If they were owned in a different way, you'd still have the trees, they'd still deliver the carbon capture, they'd still deliver all the other benefits, but you'd have the social and the economic benefits in the community as well.
Historically, there's been tax incentives for forestry ownership. Do they still exist? Are there still people who want to buy forestry purely for that reason in Scotland?
Yes, throughout the UK, in fact, forestry is completely out with the tax system. So there are no tax liabilities on forests. So it's a useful tax shelter. There's two aspects to it. One is the established private forests, which tend to be owned by people who live far away. The other is the ambitious plans that the Scottish Government has for woodland expansion. And it's budgeting £36 million a year for new forests, for new planting. There's a big question mark about, you know, who gets that money. And it seems to me that what's happening is the government is simply saying, well, here's £36 million a year, who fancies planting some trees? And of course, the forestry companies and the financial institutions are bringing in, again, investors from elsewhere, buying up land, getting millions of pounds in public money, planting trees, locking the gates and walking away. And I think this £36 million a year could be better spent on, for example, encouraging farmers in Dumfries and Galloway, let's say, telling them, look, you've got, I don't know, 5 million or you've got 10 million of this, and you've got 3 or 4 years to come up with a scheme for woodland planting in Dumfries and Galloway. And then the farmers can sort it out themselves. They can get trees on woodland. It can be more integrated with agriculture. We could also say, let's spend 20% of it on communities. So we say to communities, look, you've got 20% of this budget over the next 5 years. Go out, buy the land, you can plant the trees. So I think we could be much, much more imaginative, both about how we structure existing forest ownership, but much more importantly, and where we have much more control, how we plan new forests.
And you have looked to other countries within Europe because they don't actually have the same system of ownership as we do. They have much more community and private owned on a smaller scale than we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's stunning. If one looks at kind of Germany or France, Sweden, Norway, they have a much, much smaller pattern of forest ownership, land ownership in general, of course. And it's interesting because what people will say, well, you can't have small-scale patterns of forest ownership and also have, you know, a productive forest industry. But in fact, yes, you can. In places like Finland, they have 150,000 members of one of the biggest forest co-ops in the world, which owns 6 pulp mills and exports all over the world. In Sweden, Södracell produces a lot of pulp and paper, has big pulp mills, and it's owned by 56,000 forest farmers. So you can quite happily have a small-scale pattern of land ownership which is localised but operates as a cooperative. They also have much more communal ownership. I mean, municipalities and communes across Europe own forests. In fact, 30% of the forests in France are owned by local communes.
Do you think that this historical pattern of forest ownership in Scotland has had an impact on the environment as well? Because we often see this monoculture planting of conifers around the place.
Well, actually, Scotland is interesting because if one looks at our laws of land tenure, historically, up until the Second World War, most agricultural land in Scotland was tenanted. Now it's about 30%, but historically everyone was a tenant and there was a few big landowners. Trees belong to the landowner in Scots law, always have done. So as a consequence of that, it meant that no farmer historically would plant any trees because they didn't own them. And in fact, it wasn't until the agricultural holdings legislation in 2003 that actually gave tenant farmers the right to own a tree. So the whole history of land law in Scotland has been a history of trees being owned by the landlord. And because you've had very few landowners, that's meant that they have dominated forestry. So we had famous estates like the Duke of Atholl and people who, and Duke of Argyll, who sort of pioneered forestry in Scotland. But smaller scale owners and tenants have never had anything to do with it. And when you look at Germany and France and Sweden, you do have a pattern of small scale family ownership, mainly as a consequence of their laws of inheritance, because children historically have had legal rights to inherit land. In continental Europe, children in Scotland still don't have the legal right to inherit land, and that's meant that it stayed in larger parcels. So yes, it's very much a legacy of our land law, the way that forests are owned, plus the fact, of course, after the First World War, we set up the Forestry Commission to do a job of planting lots of trees as a strategic timber reserve. And forestry is interesting in this context because it is one of the land uses that involves change. If you're going to plant trees, that means that it's no longer going to be agriculture. And often that change is accompanied by a change of ownership. And I think that's the unhealthy thing. I think we should be encouraging far more planting by people who already own the land and who can integrate the forests into their existing operations. And I think it's unfortunate that the expansion programme of the government is seen as a conflict between farmers and foresters. I'd like to see much, much more integration.
Andy Whiteman, some very interesting ideas in amongst this, because one of the big concerns is that hill farms are being sold off and forests have been put on. That takes the people off it and you put trees on and that's fine. But his suggestion is you keep the people in the area, they carry on owning the land and they plant the trees.
And you have a more integrated approach, and you have a mixed countryside, which, you know, your kind of gut feeling is a mixture is good. Suggest it's better. And the other point they're making, you know, the fact that they've got this long tradition in Germany, say, of owning the forest leads to a mixed tree class. So you've got young trees, you've got big trees, and it's a pleasant place for recreation, as opposed to which we have this blanket forest, which you can't really walk in it till the very end and then it gets felled. But we'd certainly welcome your thoughts on that one. A lot of interesting thoughts there.
Indeed.